You are listening to Rouge, White, and Blue, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Hi, and welcome to the CFL podcast. My name is Oz Davis. I'll be your co-host for the show. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, Joe Pritchard. Joe, how's it going for you this week now that your Winnipeg Blue Bombers are clinched and in and looking good?
It's going pretty well, and I inadvertently wore a Halloween costume for the first time in 20 years today.
Okay, what was your costume?
So I have a Stamps polo that I got real cheap a while back, and I wear it to work a lot.
Okay.
And I didn't have a chance to change before my little boy needed to go trick-or-treating. So I walked around as a Stamps fan.
Wow. All right.
And it's making him sick just thinking about it.
Yes, and I'm sure that's the same reaction we're getting from Edmonton and Saskatchewan right now.
Joe, as you can tell, was battling some yuck this week.
Apparently, yes. Dr. Rouge, are you a medical doctor?
Well, no, but I did stay in my own bed last night, so, you know, that gives me some sort of medical something.
Uh-huh. Okay. What you are, Dr. Rouge, is the third co-host of the Rouge, White, and Blue CFL podcast. And may I ask you, how are you doing this week now that your Argonauts have effectively closed out their season with a thumping at the hands of Johnny Manziel?
I was going to not mention that. But, you know, if you do want to bring that up, I will, of course, simply ask you very simple questions.
Oh, no.
In comparison to my team, when was the last time your team won the Grey Cup?
Oh, come on.
Now, you see, here's by the way, I've serious note. Have okay. You noticed what is it with all the birds at McGill this season? I think it's fascinating.
I don't know. What is it with all the birds at McGill this season?
I don't know. Is Alfred Hitchcock like coming back from the dead or something? And
wow.
He's like living in Montreal of all places. I don't know.
That would be Hitchcockian.
Yes, it would be.
That would not be unlike the Master of Suspense. I was actually going to brag to Joe before he succumbed to tuberculosis over there. About because he mentioned that he posed as a Stamps fan. Well, this morning my wife was getting ready to go to work and I said, oh, you're not going to dress up as anything for Halloween. And she said, no, you know, all the millennial kids that work in the office want us all to dress up, but I don't have anything and blah, 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 blah. So I was like, okay, here. And I gave her my Todd Gurley Rams jersey to wear. And sure enough, she put it on. She took one of my ball caps. She took my Rams baseball cap. And she went as a Los Angeles Rams fan. Oh, and by the way, may I note, I know this is a CFL podcast, but I would also like to note that the Los Angeles Rams recently beat the Green Bay Packers to stay unbeaten and the favorite to win the Super Bowl.
Good job. It only took you 4 quarters to win a game. It should have taken you 2.
All right.
Also, listening to you two talking about Toronto and Montreal also make me sick.
Yes, the relevance of either of these two topics to the postseason of this year's CFL is absolutely zero. But the trash-talking quality is very high. Well done,
Joe. I must say, Joe came off his deathbed to land one sucker punch on you and ended the fight like right there.
Yeah, TKO the first, man. Awful.
Tuberculosis knockout.
Awful stuff. Well, we're not going to spend too much time talking about Toronto and Montreal as we're talking about the future of this season as opposed to the past, which is where the Alouettes and Argos are. However, I did want to say it was very nice to see that we have found, you know, possibly our quarterback for the future. And that man is Eugene Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
What a performance by Eugene Lewis. 1 of 1 for 61 yards and a touchdown. Johnny Manziel had his first assist as a CFL quarterback. So I just wanted to throw out congratulations to Mr. Lewis, who is our performer of the game, as far as I'm concerned, in that game.
On a serious note, though, what did you make of the fact that within an hour or so before kickoff to the Toronto-Montreal game on Sunday, the Al's front office announces three quarterback right. extensions to three guys, none of whom are named Johnny Manziel?
A whole lot of things went down about Manziel and the quarterback situation in Montreal. Now, during this game, I went on Twitter. I usually don't do that for a number of reasons during a game, and I haven't this season, but I did in this game. And there were actually defenders of Manziel, and finally somebody, because I was one of the people ripping on him for his lack of leadership skills. I mean, at one point in the game, he's like engaging in a war of words with his left frickin' tackle, who, okay, completely missed a block on the previous play. But I mean, at this point, they were already up 20 points in the game. And, you know, this is really something that doesn't need to happen. In any case, I was one of the people ripping on him, and Johnny had his defenders. And finally, somebody from Third Down Nation came out, one of the guys that works over there, and said, you know, according to a report that I got, you know, his teammates have said that, you know, he's an upstanding guy and this season, and he's worked really hard and all this, blah, 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 blah. Well, this in turn triggered a wave on Twitter, the kind of stuff that Joe talks about from time to time that steams him off Twitter for the rest of the Sunday or Saturday or whatever it is. You know, another wave began where it's like, oh, yeah, oh, great. He shows up to practice and he learns the plays. What a guy. You know, he's a professional football player. That's what he should be doing. He's still 0-6 going into the game, you know. So, I mean, again, the Manziel thing is a distraction. I don't know what this team is doing at quarterback. I haven't understood what they've been doing at quarterback for, ever since, what was that? The last time my team won the Grey Cup, in fact, Dr. Rouge. A number that you're well familiar with because you taunt me with it every week or week and a half.
Well, you know, to me, though, I don't think you're going to see how good Manziel can be in the CFL until he gets an offensive line and until he gets some guys who can actually catch the ball on a consistent basis.
Really, see, I blame it on the coaching staff. I mean, yeah, there is a lot of drops in this receiving core. That is something to be noted. I mean, these guys look like a slacker NFL team with the number of drops out here. They look like the Cowboys or something like that. On the other hand, you know, stand back looks great.
Yes,
there are flashes here and there on this team. There is kind of a, I don't want to say a nucleus, but like a scattered nucleus. There are pieces here, but I blame it on the coaching. When your coach begins the year saying this is a work in progress, when he drafts for a guy who is treated like a franchise quarterback 6 games in, and it's apparent that, you know, the dude doesn't know the playbook until what? 3 games later, then he's out. You know, I mean, there was never any adaptation here. Now, maybe the pieces aren't there, but there were certain stretches in this year when, I don't know, better play calling could have been made. More, I mean, that was the thing about this game. That's what I was tweeting about in this game is the second quarter, especially, they're breaking out the trick plays. You know, the line is ripping open holes for stand back. You know, after Johnny has the little spew off, you know, whatever you want to call it on the sidelines, the line is tight after that. I don't think there was a sack in the game after that. I don't even know if there's a quarterback hurry in the game after that. You know, where was this team? Where was this team all season? You know, that's what you wonder.
Quite honestly, I think they played a team that frankly didn't care.
Yeah.
You know,
there is this.
The more and more I read, it appears that there's going to be a pretty significant house cleaning in Toronto within days of the season ending. And I got to admit, my first reaction to that was, really? I mean, it's a Grey Cup champion team. And then you start looking at it and then you think to yourself, you know what? They were 5-13 the year before. They were 7-9, I think, when they or 5-9 when they got hot at the end of the last season. They're going to be roughly 4-14 this season. You know, they basically had about a 6-game stretch at the end of last season where they found a sort of, you know, lightning in a bottle kind of moment. You know, maybe just maybe Toronto does need sort of a significant house cleaning. And maybe there is a better foundation in place in Montreal than there is in Toronto. We'll have to see what happens as the season unfolds. But I will say this. I think there is less anger in Toronto and in Montreal than there is in Edmonton. Because let's face it, the fans there and the players there, there was so much more in terms of expectations. And they're watching the playoffs at home. You know, let's face it, if the three of us had said that 20 some odd weeks ago, that Edmonton is going to finish in last place in the West and is not going to make the playoffs, you know, think about, you know, the sort of responses we'd have gotten from people. It seemed impossible.
But by the same token, we knew that all five teams in the West had seemingly improved in the offseason and that we would be surprised when one of these teams got left out. We knew that at the beginning of the season.
And Joe did make the point, and I remember vividly. He said, look, you take a look at the five teams in the West. One of those teams is going to significantly play down from expectations and is going to have a season that none of us really thought was possible. And he, being the long-suffering Blue Bombers fan, said it wouldn't surprise him if he was going to be winning. No, I'm being serious.
Said, you know, I remember.
And me, being the long-suffering Winnipeg fan, is probably going to be the Blue Bombers. I don't think any of us, though, would have said, oh, yeah, it's going to be Edmonton. No way.
Wow.
We'd have thought probably BC, maybe Winnipeg, because Matt Nichols had the injury at the start of the season and all that. Or maybe Saskatchewan, because Caleros was going to be a disaster. And look at what Saskatchewan pulled off. Look at what BC has pulled off. And then there's Edmonton. Mm-hmm.
Yes, let's get on to Edmonton, because we're going to break this down this week on the Rouge, White, and Blue. Rather than game by game, we're going to break this down team by team. We put the two zombie corpses to bed already, back to bed. So let's go on to the Eskimos. I don't know if they were the disappointment of this season, but, I mean, along with the teams we just discussed, they've got to be up there. Of course, for me, it was another team, but that I'm hating more and more. But how would you – okay, Joe, let's go to you. How would you summarize this season? What's wrong? I mean, they might end – they're probably going to end up going 9-9 this season. How do they get back to that Western – Conference championship, at least?
That's a good question, how they get back there. But let's go back in the past a little bit. Feels like it wasn't even two full years ago that Len Rhodes, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, comes out and announces the firing of Ed Hervey. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine the pressure that is on him at this point after Hervey goes to BC? And takes BC above Edmonton already, and he's only been there less than a full year.
Right.
That's can't be a comfortable seat at the moment.
Right, and this is and not enough can be said about Hervey in BC, because this was my feeling on the Lions at the beginning of the year is Wally Buono says, before the season, this is my last year. GM guy comes in and says, well, we're going to do this weird sort of split the duties kind of thing. And I thought for sure this was, you know, this was going to be tug of war. Nope. Hervey's been basically invisible. He's only done positive things for this team. He stayed out of the limelight. Coach has been able to do his thing. I mean, you know, win the games he has to, i.e. those at home. And BC has done just enough to get into the playoffs, whereas, you know, Edmonton, I think, has suffered from getting their roster sort of eaten away these little holes, right? First, they lost the coaching staff. You know, they've lost receivers over the years. Zylstra, they lost last year. A couple of years ago, after they won the Cup, they were picked apart by the other CFL teams. I think now they're kind of seeing the end result of that. And I'm sure, I'm not sure, but I wouldn't at all be surprised if Tequila Williams was in the NFL next year, because that's the way things seem to be going with Edmonton wide receivers. What sort of epithet do you want to put on this Edmonton Eskimos season, Dr. Rouge?
It is simply baffling to me, the 5 or 6 games in which they either were in the lead or tied going to halftime, and the offense generated basically 0, 3, or 6 points roughly in the second half, and that offense just disappeared. And that to me suggests a couple of things. One, your coaches aren't making adjustments at halftime. Two, you don't have players on the field who are comfortable doing more than sort of the basic routes that they think they're going to run. Or three, the expectation was, well, Mike Riley will find a way to pull this out for us at the end, so let's just wait for Mike to make the big play. You know, you look at this team, the sort of Armageddon scenario is if Mike Riley turns around and says, you know what, I got a better chance of winning a Grey Cup in Vancouver, or I got a better chance of winning a Grey Cup in Toronto, or I've got a better chance of winning a Grey Cup in Hamilton. I mean, they're not going to trade Mazzoli, but I think you sort of get the idea, where he says, you know what, I'm willing to go somewhere else and take a chance. And realistically speaking, if Mike Riley becomes a free agent, with the exception of Calgary and Winnipeg and Hamilton, and maybe Ottawa, but I'm not so sure because Harris is going to be a free agent as well. With the possible exception of those three cities, Mike Riley would instantly become the number one free agent available in the winter. If he goes somewhere else, there's a realistic expectation you could say that Edmonton is probably the last place team in the West for at least another season, if not two.
Oh, and whatever team he goes to is in first, right?
And could very well be in first.
I mean, imagine him on Saskatchewan. I mean, come on. I mean, that's almost not fair at that point. If they keep everybody else that they got right now, if they keep a reasonable level of quality.
Well, and you know, let's face it. What we don't know is, at least to a significant degree, what is Mike Riley's relationship with Jason Moss? What is Mike Riley's relationship with Ed Hervey? What is Mike Riley's relationship with Chris Jones? Mm. Any one of those three men can tip the scales just enough. Because let's face it, Mike Riley's going to get his money. The question is, does he want his money in Western Canada, the Canadian Rockies, the middle of the country, or somewhere towards the east? But he's going to get his money. And if he decides, you know what, this Edmonton ship is going in the wrong direction, yikes. That would be the – and then I think you're right. Then you could easily see Williams saying, what the heck, I'm going to take my chances in the NFL next year. Or maybe go down to the States and play in one of the new leagues that's forming down here, figuring that up there – without Mike Riley, his numbers aren't going to look all that impressive.
I wouldn't put too much stock in going to one of those, what do we call them? Rogue leagues, minor leagues that are springing up in the U.S. in the near future. We're going to talk about that in an off-season podcast for sure, because I've got a few ideas about that. I've got a few things to say about that, but not for today. Way too much stuff going on. Now, you already elicited this team, so I'm going to go to them next. Let's talk about my least favorite team in the CFL right now, the Hamilton Tiger Cats. In another must-win game, I don't know, they've had a lot of what's less than a must-win game, like a should-win? Mm. I swear to God, in should-wins and must-wins this year, they're about 1-5. This was, of course, the ultimate must-win. They had to keep any reasonable hope of getting that top seed, which I really think they could have used, is not going to happen. Losing badly 30-13 to Ottawa. Okay, so again, you know, both of these two teams, as I was, you know, I don't know, looking into this game before the game, I looked at the records. Neither of this team has had a longer than 3-game winning or losing streak this year. Mm-hmm. Once. Hamilton has done it once, and now Ottawa is on a 3-game win streak. Am I correct? I think so. How much, I mean, do you think, in your estimation, Joe, let's go to Joe first. In your estimation, Joe, have the Red Blacks righted the ship? Can they do something in the playoffs? Can they win one game? Because that's what they have to do.
Well, they could certainly win one game.
That's what they have to do.
And given that BC will be traveling to Hamilton, they're probably going to win that game against the Tiger Cats. And they clearly have, at this point, the psychological advantage there, too.
They do. They do. How do you like Ottawa's chances going forward, Doctor?
I think they've got the easiest road, obviously, to the Grey Cup, simply because they've got to win only one game, and they know they'll have to win it at home. Right. And they'll either take on a Hamilton team who, in the back of their heads, will be thinking, man, they beat us twice in back-to-back weeks, less than a month before this divisional championship game. Or they'll be taking on a BC team that will have played its second straight, you know, long distance road trip sort of game. Although I anticipate if BC wins in Hamilton, they're going to stay in the East Coast or on the Eastern, in the Eastern time zone leading up to the Ottawa game. I don't think they'll fly back home and then fly back. On paper, I think right now you say Ottawa's probably the favorite of the three teams coming out of the or that will be part of the Eastern playoff group, simply because they've got to win only once and they only have to do it at home.
Okay, so you like them as the favorite. Now, we're actually in an interesting situation in the CFL this year because effectively every team, whether they're playing next week or not, has a bye. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the only team that's really playing to win next week is Calgary at BC. But otherwise, the rest of these teams can effectively sit the starters. And they might. They might. I mean, and I would imagine that Wally Buono, again, is not going to have his guys play the full game, like in this game against Calgary. Like we talked about last week, he pulled his guys late in this game, and I think he's going to do that again next week against Calgary. So, in effect, like basically every team gets a free bye this year, whether you're a home team in the conference championship or not. So I thought that was a pretty interesting situation. We'll see what Ottawa does next week, but I would, if I were them, I'd be smart and tune up.
Mm-hmm.
I would play that game against Toronto. You know, they've got to put in like, they've got to play it like a proper game, at least through two or three quarters, because this team is just, I don't know, in my opinion, are they, I mean, do you think that they are consistent and solid enough to win that game?
Do you mean the Eastern Division Final?
Yeah. Because I wonder about that.
I think so.
You never know what you're going to get.
The reason I say I think so is, again, if it's Hamilton that they're facing, they would have whacked him three consecutive times during the regular season. They would be, in effect, as you said, enjoying almost 2 weeks off versus 1 week off. They would be playing at home. I mean, logically, I say right now, Ottawa is probably the team to beat in the East. And yet I look at Ottawa and over their last 8 games, 1-2, lost 2. 1-2, lost 2.
Yeah.
And now, all right, they're winning games. They're in another 2-game winning streak. Let's say they go into the playoffs on a 3-game winning streak. Let's say they win this week. Ottawa's going to win 5 consecutive games and win the Grey Cup. I'm a little squishy on that idea. I got to admit that.
Right. Okay. Let's go to this one then, because I was really anxious to talk to you. Well, I shouldn't say anxious. I was really wanting to know what you guys made of Saskatchewan 35 BC 16. I mean, I for one, again, totally enjoyed the way we haven't seen it in about a month or so, that the Saskatchewan defense took over and won this game. Zach Caleros knocked out of this game. How do you like Saskatchewan, whose defense looks better than ever? In fact, record-tying defense, 11 defensive touchdowns this year. I think only about half of those were in the Winnipeg game, Joe. 11 defensive touchdowns scored for the Riders this year. Let me ask you first, Dr. Roosh, because you might be able to be a bit more objective. How about the Riders going forward with a great defense and a huge question mark on offense?
If Zach Caleros has a concussion and is out a considerable period of time, I don't think Saskatchewan makes it to the Grey Cup. If Zach Caleros is playing remotely with the consistency he's capable of, Travis Lule and Zach Caleros, to me, are a little bit like the same quarterback. And what I mean by that is, they're not going to put up the stats that a Riley's going to put up. They're not going to put up the stats that a Mitchell is going to put up. But on the field, the guys that they are around believe, BC believes we're going to win when Travis Lule's the quarterback. The guys in Saskatchewan, we believe we're going to win when Zach Caleros is the quarterback. You take Travis Lule out of the BC lineup, they're done. You take Zach Caleros out of the Saskatchewan lineup, I think they're done too. So for
really?
Me, the big question is, wow. I just don't think there's enough trust and confidence in Brandon Bridge, both around the team and maybe more importantly in that coaching staff. I think they believe they can win with Zach Caleros. I could see them getting to the Grey Cup with Zach Caleros as the quarterback if, again, you're talking about a guy who's healthy.
Wow. See, very interesting, because this is not the Hamilton Tiger Cats. The Riders this year, I believe, have won four games in which they have not scored a passing touchdown, if I am correct. This is not the Tiger Cats where they are quarterback dependent. Brandon Bridge also is okay. Again, I've been saying this since he was with Montreal, not a flashy quarterback at all, but he does take care of the ball reasonably well. I mean, here he's got 131 attempts this year, just 3 interceptions, no fumbles. So, this is a reasonable stat line. Defense wins championships. Joe, you're going to have to face your Bombers are going to have to face these Riders one way or another on the path to the Grey Cup. How do you like the Riders' chances?
Take everything that Dr. Roosh said and take it to heart, okay. Because I don't think the Riders get past the Bombers the way they're playing right now without Caleros having a good game. And by good game, I don't mean 400 yards. I mean, he's capable of moving the offense, the defense does their thing, and we have a tight one at the end.
Okay.
But if the offense is no threat, then Winnipeg can go conservative as well, and I would bet you anything that Winnipeg wins that type of game over the Riders.
Wow, very interesting. Very interesting. Okay, because, I mean, now you're saying this – having seen the back-to-back job, right? Because in one game, the Riders won based on, yes, Zach Caleros having a nice performance, threw for a couple touchdown passes, 0 interceptions. But in the other game, of course, that was that dominant defensive and special teams performance. The Riders beat them.
And it was a dominant defensive performance because the Zach Nichols had apparently been abducted by aliens for a few weeks. And the replacement they put there was not programmed correctly and kept just handing the ball over to the Riders whenever the Bombers got close to scoring.
See, that's interesting. That's interesting because I have a completely different theory about that. And it has to do with the CFL's true MOP for the season. But we're not going to get to the Bombers yet because I'm going to eliminate every other team from winning the Grey Cup until we get to the Bombers. So we can talk about the Bombers winning the Grey Cup. In any case, let's go on to how about this one? All right, let's talk some Bombers. But first, let's talk some Calgary Stampeders, who in yet another chance to close it out, could not against Winnipeg. Winnipeg, I would say, more or less controlled, if not exactly the game, the tempo of this game. And for once, you know, it was never a doubt that Winnipeg was out of this thing. I never thought that Winnipeg would lose, which is crazy because usually I'm thinking about that. I'm thinking that about their competition, the Stamps. Nichols, one of his better games this season. This guy's on a roll, 24 of 33, 358 yards, 2 touchdowns. On the other side, you know, here's Bo Levi Mitchell, comparable stats, 22 of 35, 274 yards, 1 TD, no picks, not many turnovers from Calgary. Here's the $64,000 Canadian dollar question, Dr. Rouge. What's wrong with the Stamps?
They don't have a deep enough, talented enough receiving core right now, to compete. Their best hope right now is BC decides, the heck with it. This game doesn't matter to us this weekend. And that gives Calgary every opportunity to win the West. And then their hope has to be that Saskatchewan and Winnipeg just beat the snot out of each other and that they get to the Western Final as a bruised and battered team. Okay. And Calgary then makes enough plays, gets to the Grey Cup, and then, all right, after 2 years of being the team that should have won, they go into it as the team that maybe isn't going to win, and the fates smile on them, and the worst of the three in terms of talent, Calgary Stampeders teams, you know, ends up winning the Grey Cup. I think if Calgary loses this weekend, I don't think Calgary wins next weekend. In other words, I think their only chance of getting to the Western Final is winning this weekend, so they know they're going to host that game. Because right now,
and this team
does not look like they can get it done.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. Joe, let me ask you this about this game specifically. I like to ask this one. How much was Winnipeg winning? How much was Calgary losing?
I don't think Calgary gave it away by any stretch. I think Winnipeg played a pretty good game.
They did.
And Calgary played a pretty good game. And in this, I wouldn't have been surprised if the score would have been flipped, but I'm glad it was my boys on the side of the top side of the board for once in situations like that. But I think Calgary's kind of lost that psychological advantage they had on everybody, where it's we're the Stamps, where you're going to have to beat us. And now teams are showing that they're able to do that. There's just not quite that same level of, okay, it's the Stamps. We have to be perfect. And teams inevitably, when they try to be perfect on the field, tend to start making mistakes.
Right, you overthink.
Because they're so worried about it.
Yeah.
No, now teams could just look at Calgary and go, okay, they're on a downslide. If we play our game, which is what Winnipeg did last week, we could beat them. And now the teams feel like they can do that, I think that's going to hurt Calgary more than any personnel issue they have.
Okay. All right. So, Dr. Roos, the conclusion that we seem to be heading to is that the team best poised to at least come out of the West and maybe even win this whole thing is the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Can that be so?
Absolutely. Right now, I mean, you know, I don't care who finishes second. I don't care who finishes first. We know Winnipeg's going to be third.
They got to play them both. Right. They got
to
play them both.
They're going to have to win 2 road games in order to get to the Grey Cup.
Right.
I have far more confidence in Winnipeg winning 2 games, whether it's Calgary first, Saskatchewan second, or the other way around, than I do BC winning 2 games at Hamilton and then at Ottawa. I have more confidence in Winnipeg winning 2 games on the road than I do Hamilton beating BC at home and then going into Ottawa and winning. In other words, yeah, the road is difficult. Let's not kid ourselves. It would be, you know, let's put it this way. If Winnipeg were first in the West, I think all of us right now would be saying they're the favorites to win the Grey Cup. End of story.
Yeah.
The only reason you say, whoa, wait a minute, is because they're going to have to win once in Saskatchewan. We know that. And they're going to have to win once in Calgary. We know that. We just don't know in which order. Right now, I think not only they can do that, I think I'm confident enough to say that right now they will win those two games and they will get to the Grey Cup, which wow. means when Joe gets to Edmonton, he finds the closest church wow. he can find. He's going to pray for 4 days. He's going to light every candle in the church. He's going to go to Commonwealth, and he is going to be St. Joseph, hoping that his team pulls it off. And let's face it, it may not need even a whole lot of prayers, because that team right now is the best in the CFL right now.
Are you a religious man, Joe?
Not that religious. I'm not going to waste 4 days in a church.
There you go. Yeah, of course not. Are you kidding? Dude, this is podcast row. There's beer to be drunk, you know? There's
exactly.
Okay. Now, look, I've got a hot take. I don't know if this is a hot take, but I just want to share this with you all, and you can kick it around a little bit. We talked about this a little while ago about how, at least in my estimation, and I don't really think I'm alone, there isn't really a clear most outstanding player candidate, especially now I think that the Stamps defense isn't quite as shut down and fear-inducing mm-hmm. as it had been earlier in the season. And it's the Riders defense that's breaking the records. Of course, you know, I've been a Tiger Cats truther all year after stupidly picking them to win the whole thing at the beginning of the season. And you know, I don't think that Zach Galeris' performance in that game alone should have him in contention for this thing. I don't think a quarterback whose team doesn't make the playoffs should be in consideration for this thing. So I think your most outstanding player of this season is Weston Dressler.
Excuse me?
Weston Dressler. He is your MVP.
Excuse me?
He's your MOP. He's your most outstanding player.
Go ahead.
Okay.
I'm listening.
Okay. Look, the truth is, I was breaking down these numbers last week. The truth is that the most telling stat is simply this. Without him in the lineup, that team is 0-4. Period. With him in the lineup, they are a Grey Cup threat. When they finished that four-game losing streak, we were talking about, oh my God, they're not going to make the playoffs. We're talking about how they're going to miss. He comes back, they're back up to snuff. Here's another good stat for you. Okay, without Dressler in the lineup, they score 24.25 points per game, 24.25 points per game. With him in the lineup before the last game, so it's gone down a little bit, they score 33.33 points with him in the lineup. He is good for more than a touchdown and a convert, basically, a game. Okay? To me, that's most outstanding player. To me, he had the biggest effect on his team and possibly, if the Bombers go far, on this league in 2018. That's my vote.
Joe, you got to take this one first.
I do, huh?
Yeah, because the Moretti computer is still processing this, and it's still coming up with, you know, error.
Okay, now hold on. Then I want to say one more thing. A little bit off topic, but I got two words for you. Three words for you. Willie Stargell, 1979.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now mm-hmm. kick it around, Joe.
Joe, were you even born in 1970? Alive in 1979?
Yeah, but he knows what happened in 79.
Yeah, so you're saying we are family, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think your theory has a little bit of merit, because if you recall last year's Winnipeg offense, a lot of it was, let's send every receiver we have deep, and we'll put Andrew Harris 5 yards down, 5 yards down or past the line and throw it to him. He'll turn around and run three guys over for the first down.
Right.
Teams have taken that away this year.
And right.
Or the Bombers aren't running that so much. So Nichols' security blanket, and the reason why you're not hearing about the thousand thing after July is just gone.
Right.
So Dressler's been that guy. And when he hasn't had it, that's when Nichols has been taking the silly risks. And when Nichols takes those silly risks, well, Banjo Bowl happens.
Right.
You don't want Banjo Bowl happening the rest of the year. At least I don't.
Okay, Dr. Rouge. You're still vetoing. Right? You don't like this move.
I'm not opposed to the idea, but I think if you're going to make a case for the guy that top to bottom has really turned this team into a championship caliber kind of team, I think Adam Big Hill, fairly or unfairly, he's going to get those votes. And I think Big Hill will be, for lack of a better word, Winnipeg's representative as MOP.
Okay.
More so than Dressler.
Okay.
Look,
I'm happy with that.
I'm not saying Dressler I'm not saying conceptually it's a bad idea. I think though that Big Hill will automatically get more consideration, in part because, and I still think this is true. I still think Winnipeg has given up the second fewest points defensively in the league.
That is correct.
You know, I know people are talking about Saskatchewan and all those defensive touchdowns and all that. I'm not saying that's unimportant, but the Winnipeg defense, you know, look, I know people look at Banjo Bowl and go, whoa, they got killed 31-0. Yeah, but basically Matt Nichols threw four touchdown passes for Saskatchewan.
Yeah, and actually the 31-0 game was the bomber win. The Banjo Bowl was
32-29 or something like that.
Yeah, it was close.
Yeah, because Nichols had like six touchdown passes in that game.
That's right. The Nichols disaster was in Saskatchewan. That's right. I had the locations flip flop.
That was my favorite game of the year so far. Sorry, Joe.
Ouch.
I think
Big Hill though gets the vote as Winnipeg's most outstanding, most valuable. I know those two terms are different, and I know the league uses MOPs instead of MVPs, whatever.
Yeah, speak metric.
You know, no big deal. I do agree with you. I think as much as Mike Riley is liked and respected, it's awfully hard to pick a guy whose team finished in last and whose team offensively disappeared five or six times.
Oh yeah.
I think it's going to be hard to pick Mitchell because again, the last 4 weeks, he's not thrown for 300 yards. He has not gotten his team a victory. I don't think you can vote for Travis Lule only because he's basically played half the season. I think really that you're looking at Big Hill and Mazzoli as your Western choice and your Eastern choice when it's all done.
I would of course be thrilled with the Big Hill nomination too, but I remember he got off to a bit of a slow start. So I mean, again, like, you know, you could say that he didn't really miss, but for the first three or four games he wasn't quite the player that he was now. I mean, you know, now he looks like 2-3 years ago when he was just totally taking over games. And
well, Richie, what happened is Richie Hall decided to stop slamming him into the center 30 times a game.
Right. Mm-hmm. Good call, Joe. Yeah, you're dead on. Dead on. Dead correct. Okay, so I guess we can talk a tiny bit about this game next week, the one game that matters. I mean, it's a shame because once again, I get to go out to Las Vegas, but there's very little to bet on this week because I'm not even going to pay attention to these first three games. Are you going to watch these first three games, Dr. Rouge? Are you going to watch the Toronto game? Are you this?
Absolutely.
Devoted? All right. Absolutely. Good man. Good man. Good man. I may not.
Somebody needs to count the Rouges.
And let's face it, I might be the only one out there for crying out loud, you know?
But no one's counting the teams getting rouged.
Next year there's going to be Rouges for, Rouges against.
Nice.
Yes, right. There will be. Nice. One day though, I hope. My CFL television broadcast wish of all time is that one of the announcers, Rod Smith, Gord Miller, Rod Black, Chris Cuthbert, one of the four is going to say, so-and-so kicker, ball in the end zone, it's a rouge, and we know that Anthony Moretti in the United States is happy as can be right now. At that moment, I will be, it will be a moment of perfection if that were to ever happen. So wow. Anybody listening, if you have a connection to one of those four gentlemen, send them this part of the podcast, because if they were to ever mention it, I would be the happiest person to have ever watched a CFL game.
Oh, my
God. Oz, I believe that would count as a shout-out to our friend south of the border in the Rod Black drinking game as well. So you'd be happy, too.
Oh, man. Well, I was just going to say, okay, first of all, if it's Rod calling that game, you would be Dr. Rode. Rod, you know, my man Rod Black. If it were him calling the game, you'd be Dr. Rogue, would be the first issue. And the second... and of course, the second issue is, as Joe pointed out, he'd have to, like, you know, throw in the south of the border cliche. You just can't get tired of that one. Not.
But think about it. Would it still be a moment of perfection?
Right. Well, see, that's the thing. And then at the end, it would be, and Dr. Rogue is our happiest friend south of the border. Or is he? They're calling it back. Right? It would be one of those. This one's coming back.
Just explode.
Right? Oh
my Twitter feed would just go bananas.
Of course.
Moment, all right?
Of course. Oh, yeah. That's your viral moment, Dr. Rogue. That's your viral moment, Dr. Rogue. In any case,
that's why I'm watching this weekend, just in case.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Good man. Good man. True devotion. I'm actually might watch that game because I'm interested to see what the Red Blacks are going to do in essentially a meaningless tune-up game. But I think they need to tune up, in my opinion. In any case, let's talk about the one that matters. The last game of the week is BC Lions home. Six and a half point underdogs against the Stampeders. Now, I don't know, Joe. We talked about this last week. BC Lions kind of has the opportunity to take the foot off the pedal if they want. They've had the thing clinched a couple of weeks ago. They're still tuning up for the playoffs. Stamps got to win this thing by more than a touchdown, right?
Yeah, I would say take the money and run.
Okay. All right. I mean, they're finally going to, like, nail this one down and ice it, right, Dr. Rouge?
Boy, they had better. Again, no, I mean, I'm being serious. If they don't win this weekend, they're not going to win next weekend, and that means Calgary is going to end the 2018 season with six consecutive losses.
Yeah.
Nobody would have predicted that unless, you know, all right, yeah, if you'd have said to somebody, Calgary's going to lose six consecutive games this season, then people would have said, okay, one of two things happens. That means either Alex Singleton is lost for the season with an injury, or Bo Levi Mitchell is lost for the
right.
season with an injury. Yeah, other than that, there's no way that's going to happen.
Right. Yeah, I'm just calling up the page here. I want to see when the last time they even lost six games in a season was. Let's see. Okay, you have to go back to 2012. Right. But they actually got to the Grey Cup that year. And they lost to?
You know who they lost.
Yeah, I sure do. Your Toronto Argonauts. But, yeah, that was the last time they lost six games. And that's before the Bo Levi Mitchell era, is it not? Mm-hmm. Or is that his rookie year? No. 2014 was his rookie.
Wasn't Drew Tate the – was no, wait. It wasn't Drew Tate. Who was the quarterback for them in 2012?
Oh, that's a very good question. You got that one, Joe?
Still might have been Henry Burris at that point.
All right, let's see. So I've got let's see. Chad Katzer, no, Ricky Finn. Okay. Wikipedia is not helping me. In any case, that was the last time the Stamps lost six in a row, or did not win six in a row. Did not win six, let's say. Wow, yeah, interesting. Interesting there. Now, okay, but I was thinking about this. One more thought before we go, because we can get out of here. But what about the Riders in this situation, right? They're on the bye right now. If Calgary loses at BC, that means Saskatchewan's surprise has another bye week. Does that throw them off at all? What do you think? Does that mess with their momentum, or as Rod Black would have it, their mojo?
Joe, you want to go first?
Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think it messes with it at all.
Okay. I think everybody wants the bye week, right?
Yeah, you take the bye weeks, you get healthy. I am looking. I was off. Burris left after 2011, so it must have been Drew Tate 2012.
Good call, Dr. Rouge. Nice one.
Drew Tate.
Okay, great. Well, we can.
No, wait. Kevin Glenn?
Oh, Kevin. Oh.
Oh, I think you're right. It was Kevin Glenn right. that year. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, because Tate took over for him eventually.
Okay. Yes. And then there was like, and then there was a question of whether would Ricky Stanzi be the quarterback of the future? No. you know, and then Mitchell came along.
Because Tate was going to start, got hurt, so Glenn was a starter. Yeah. Tate was going to start in 2013, and same thing happened. Basically, week two was Drew Tate's least favorite week of the season.
Yep.
Right. Okay. Well, let's lock this one down. Let's put this one to bed and get to enjoying, well, kind of an off week in the CFL and then the playoffs. Yeah. What are we going to talk about next week, guys? We already talked about the playoffs. In any case, let's worry about that then. Joe, take us out of here. Famous last words for this week?
Well, if we don't have much to talk about next week, we can just always talk about how awesome the Bombers are. How often do I get to say that?
Well, for a few weeks this year, they were on that roll, and we were talking about that. We had guests on the show. We were all raving about your – me and poor Cliffy, who already knew our season was doomed, were raving about your Bombers. So you do get some chances. When you actually head out to Canada for the Grey Cup festivities?
That'll be the Wednesday of Grey Cup week.
Wednesday. Okay, so you get – wow, okay, good. So you get some nice quality time beforehand. Don't go to church.
Oh, yes.
Don't go to church, man. Don't go to church.
Well, I'll be going to the Church of Football. How about that?
Excellent. Perfect. I thought you lived right near there, right? Green Bay. Isn't that the Church of Football? In any case.
Some say that's the case.
Yeah, some do, I'm sure. A lot do. In any case, okay, Dr. Rouge, what you got to say for yourself to close out this show?
I am hoping that the crowd in BC on Saturday night is loud, and that when there is that necessary and absolutely deserved tribute to Wally Buono, that the ovation is loud, that the ovation is sustained, and that he gets. Again, one deserved send-off in BC, because we know that's going to be the final game that they're going to play there this season. If it ends up in a win, who knows? But if you are right, Oz, that BC is on some sort of, you know, magical mystery ride, who knows? Mm-hmm. You know, it might not be the last time that Wally Buono hoists a trophy, but regardless, you know, even if they go out in the first round of the playoffs the week after, this is Wally Buono's weekend. He deserves an incredibly long and sustained ovation throughout the CFL, but obviously from those fans in BC this weekend.
True. True. Well put, Dr. Rouge. Well put. And the guy that is least likely to deserve a standing ovation will also be playing in his last game at his home stadium this year. That's Johnny Manziel. For the Alouettes, I won't be giving him a standing ovation. I kind of hope that the Alouettes lose this week and then that Manziel is not the quarterback for the team next year, because then I can always say that the only CFL team he ever beat was the Toronto Argonauts. I love my co-hosts this much, ladies and gentlemen.
Wow.
And on that very cold note,
Hirolahu, field goal good. Toronto wins. Montreal didn't make the playoffs again.
Woohoo! This has been the Roos Red and Blue CFL podcast. I'm Oz Davis, and for my co-host Joe Pritchard and Dr. Rouge, who I won't be speaking to for a couple of weeks. We'll talk to you amongst ourselves next week. Enjoy the games this week. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.